The main title of my talk today is Holes, and the reason for that title will become blatantly obvious within the next 10 minutes. It is late in that lazy part of the afternoon, and if you don't get it by the end of my talk, that's okay. Just find me later in the hallway and I'll explain it to you again. The insect of interest to our group is the western corn rootworm. This is a major pest of corn in the United States and also in Europe now. We study mainly the larval stage of the insect. This is the most economically significant life stage of the rootworm. It's the larva that feeds on the roots of corn, as you can see in the picture on the right. They can do significant damage to the roots of the corn to the point where the plant has no structural support and lodges. This pest costs growers over $1 billion a year in the United States alone in control costs and yield losses. We are studying the chemical ecology and the behavior of the western corn rootworm larvae. And in particular, we're looking at key behaviors that are exhibited by neonate larvae during the host selection process. And then we're attempting to isolate and identify the compounds that are responsible for those specific behaviors. We've recently developed a new technique which is providing some exciting insight into larval feeding and the mechanisms of host selection by neonate western corn rootworm larvae. Today what I'm going to talk about is this new technique. I want to first describe the bioassay method that we're using and then present some data that we recently obtained using this new technique. The bioassay that I'm conducting is really quite simple. We germinate corn seeds for 7 days, and then we excise the 4-centimeter terminal part of the root, so the end 4 centimeters of the root. We then dip the cut end in paraffin, melted paraffin wax, and this keeps the roots moist for quite some time. The excised root is then buried in moist soil in a small plastic container. A single neonate larva is introduced on top of the soil, and you can see the teeny little larva on top of that little piece of filter paper. And this little guy is then given 5 hours in which to locate and feed on the corn root. After that 5 hours, we remove the root from the soil and evaluate it for damage. And this is the key to our new technique. We use something as simple as food coloring that you can buy at the grocery store. The root is dipped very briefly, just 5 to 10 seconds, in full strength, generic or name brand, green food coloring. It's then rinsed briefly in water, then you blot it, gently dry on paper towels, and then it's immediately evaluated under a microscope. What this dye does is it selectively stains the tissues in the corn root that are damaged by rootworm feeding. So what we can see in this picture, the arrow is pointing to a feeding hole made by a neonate larva on a corn root. Now in this particular picture, the larva is still present inside the corn root. You can kind of see a little brown coloring there. That's the larva guy inside. However, if the larva were to exit the root, which they sometimes do, we would still be able to see the entire feeding tunnel made by the larva inside the root, because all of the damaged tissue is stained by this dye. Now, I just want to point out that we aren't the first ones to dye corn roots to look for larvae. Terry Branson used food coloring about 40 years ago. He was trying to visualize just the larva inside the roots. And prior to that, way back in about 1934, Goody used an acid fuchsin dye to visualize nematodes, not in corn roots, but in other roots. Now, a larva doesn't always make a tunnel and enter the corn root. As in this picture here, the larva made a hole, a feeding hole, but then he withdrew his head and he crawled up a little higher on the root, and you can see the larva up a little bit higher to the left, and he's looking for another place to feed. So what this technique allows us to see are all of the feeding holes made by larva, regardless of whether the larva entered the root or not. We've used this technique recently in a couple of different experiments. In our first experiment, we wanted to look at larval feeding on various native sources of resistance in maize. And the list of genotypes on the left includes a control and then 7 varieties of corn, which have been identified as having some degree of resistance to rootworm damage in the field. We wanted to look at larval feeding on these varieties of corn because the actual mechanism of resistance is not fully known, or in some cases not known at all for these varieties. And we wanted to see if maybe there's a behavioral mechanism of resistance at work here. One of the results we can look at with this bioassay is whether or not the larva entered the root. And that's what this graph is showing for these different genotypes. It runs the full gamut. On the far left, we have a variety, AR1705616. And on this graph, it shows that 0% of the larvae did not enter the root. Or to phrase that better, 100% of the larvae chose to enter the root of this variety of corn. The other extreme is on the far right on the graph. And I'll call this SUM2162. For this genotype of corn, 100% of the larvae did not enter the corn roots. This result is especially exciting because these results really complement some field work that's been done by Bruce Hibbard and his group in Columbia, Missouri. They conducted some field tests with these genotypes of corn, and for SUM2162, they recovered significantly fewer larvae were recovered from this variety of corn in the field test. And of the larvae that were recovered, they had significantly smaller head capsules. In addition to the data shown here, fewer adults were also recovered from this field test from SUM2162. We also conducted this bioassay looking at feeding of larvae on BT and isoline corn. In the first test, we looked at MON863 event and its isoline, and we tested it with two colonies of larvae. Colony 0 is a susceptible colony, susceptible to BT, and colony 3 has been reared by Bruce Hibbert's group for multiple generations on MON863, so it has developed some degree of resistance to BT corn. Just a reminder, MON863 contains the Cry3 BB1 protein. If we again look at the larvae that did not enter the corn roots, we see, looking at colony 0 and colony 3 and comparing larval entry on MON863 and its isoline, we see the same result. Significantly more larvae did not enter the BT corn roots. We conducted the same experiment using MON88017 event and its isoline, again using the susceptible and resistant larvae. MON88017 also contains the Cry3 BB1 protein. However, it's recently shown to have improved control in the field against western corn rootworm. And part of the explanation, it may be due to a difference in distribution, that the Cry protein in 88017 may be more broadly or widely distributed in the corn roots. If we look at the same experiment on this type of BT corn, with the colony 0, the susceptible larvae, we don't see a difference in larval entry between the BT corn and the isoline corn. However, with the resistant colony 3, we see that significantly more larvae did not enter the corn roots compared to its isoline. Now, there's another effect that became very obvious to us when we were doing these experiments, and we call that the multiple hole effect. What you see on this slide are two feeding holes, one on the lower, one down below, and then a few millimeters up the root, there's a second feeding hole. Now, this is really difficult to catch a picture of because in order to catch it on the microscope camera, the holes have to be within a few millimeters of each other, and they also have to be on the same side of the root. And this root happened to have three different feeding holes made by a single larva. So we wanted to see if this multiple hole effect was occurring more frequently on a certain type of corn. So we pulled all the data together regardless of colony and just looked at it by corn variety. If you look at the two graphs on the right, the 88017 and its isoline, you see a very similar pattern. That is, a larger proportion of the larvae make a single hole on the isoline and on MON88017. If you look at the two graphs on the left for MON8863 and its isoline, you see that for the isoline, again, larvae tend to make a single hole on the corn root. But the distribution of holes is very different for MON863. Almost as many times, the larva makes two holes as a single hole in the root. We also get larvae making three holes, and in some cases, even four holes made on a single root by an individual larva. So the main story we get from these four graphs is larvae make more holes in roots of 863. From these couple of experiments we've done so far, we can draw some conclusions. With regard to native sources of resistance in maize, we've seen that it is obvious that larvae have some preferences with regard to corn variety, and especially we're talking about SUM2162. And this is exciting because this may be evidence that there is a behavioral mechanism involved in the resistance of this variety. We've also seen that larvae do not prefer to feed on MON863. and larvae make more holes in the roots of MON863 than in its isoline. We see that with 88017, larvae feed equally on the BT corn and its isoline. And it's possible that the difference in feeding, especially the number of holes and the entry, on the MON88017 and MON863 may be explained by the difference in distribution of the CRY protein within the corn roots. I'd like to thank a few of the individuals who helped with this research or presentation, and if there's time, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.